So last Sunday, I spoke about two realms. It was an unusual message for many, but I spoke about two realms. One, a natural realm, a physical realm, this realm that we all live in, that we understand, we can see, it's tangible, we can see, we can touch and sense it and interact with it. And that is the realm from which the first Adam came. The first Adam is a Bible concept that we talked about, the first Adam, and then there's a second Adam. So the second realm is this supernatural realm, this spiritual realm, and they're both very real. We oftentimes kind of shy away. Christians sometimes shy away from this word supernatural. In fact, the reason that what prompted God to lead me to this message was one of my favorite people in the entire world. It's a man here in our church, and he's always so encouraging to me. Knows so much Bible, and I love him so very very much. And I won't tell who it is, but he sent me an encouraging text, as he often does, about the message. But he made a comment that there's some a little confusion about this term supernatural or this concept of supernatural. And I think sometimes that's because of what our world has done to it. You know, our world has taken, as the world takes so many Bible concepts, takes them hostage and tries to turn them into something. We normally think of supernatural when we say that as something negative, something dark, some demon or something like that. But supernatural, the word supernatural just simply means outside the bounds of what is natural. See, we have this natural world that we live in. The laws of nature that are immutable. It's what we know. But there are things that are outside of those bounds, and that's what supernatural means. Now, this morning I want to take it head on, and I'm not going to talk about topics so much in that, but I want to use it. I want to explain it first by looking at a Bible story that is probably pretty well known. In fact, if you are one of those people who read your Bible through in a year, you plan to read your Bible through in a year. A lot of people, come January 1st, it's Genesis 1, right? And you make it through, and usually people make it through at least the book of Exodus, the first few chapters of Exodus, and then it starts getting into some things, and you're like, yeah, okay, so, and then you skip ahead, and we skip some of those books. But this is one that you will have read, usually just not too far into that, but it actually illustrates beautifully these two realms and the results of these two realms, in particular our faith with regard to these two realms. And so I'm going to talk about that here in just a minute. As you know, of course, here in just a moment, we're going to get to Genesis chapter 12, and we're going to read, and leading up to that, of course, we know that God began with Adam as the first modern human and works our way through. We know what happened with Noah and the flood, and we talked about the Tower of Babel on Wednesday, and then we end up in chapter number 12, and God does something in Genesis chapter number 12 that is probably, other than the cross, other than Jesus going to the cross, probably the most important event or the most important move that God makes in all of Scripture, because the rest of the Bible is basically pointing back to this one thing that God does. And that one thing that God does in chapter 12 is he calls a man named Abraham. He calls him Abram at first. His name was actually Abram. God changes it to Abraham later. But he calls Abram to begin a people that will be wholly set apart unto God. And we know that as the nation of Israel, the Jews. And so this is the event that we're getting ready to read about. So in Genesis chapter 12, let's just begin in verse number 1. God is calling Abram, and he is getting ready to do something absolutely remarkable with a truly remarkable man. Notice, "Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee." Now before I go any further, let me just go back to what I said, and then we're going to read the next two verses. When I said that we struggle a little bit with the word supernatural, we struggle with that concept, we're going to reclaim that concept today. And in fact, the main thrust of my message today, the main point that I want to make today, is not only should we embrace that term, but your relationship with God and my relationship with God should be supernatural as opposed to natural. Okay, that's what I want to show you today, and I want to prove that. And I want to use this very, very well-known story that we're going to get to here in just a few minutes to illustrate that. Let's continue then, verse number 2. And I will make of thee a great nation. I will bless you and I will make your name great. This is all a promise God's giving to Abram. He said, and you will be a blessing. Verse 3, and I will bless those who bless you and curse him that curses you. And in you shall all families of the earth be blessed. Now, those are three very, very well-known verses. And many of you probably could even, you've heard them so many times, you could even quote those. So God is calling Abram and he says, I'm going to take you and I'm going to make you very, very special. I'm going to do something remarkable in your life. I'm going to turn you into somebody remarkable. He's getting ready to make Abraham somebody that every single Israelite for the rest of time will all look back to as their father. And in fact, we as Christians also have to look back to Abraham, because that is where God decided to change the entire world by creating this people holy unto himself. Now, here's the remarkable thing, though. When God calls Abram here, he is already 75 years old. 75 years old. Now, how many of you are... never mind. I don't want to ask you to raise your hand. If you're 75 years or older, can you imagine? You know, God is calling you to do something you've never done before, something totally different from what you've experienced before. At the age of 75... Abraham's life is getting ready to take a radical, radical change. Abraham was already a remarkable man. He was already very wealthy. He had vast amounts of land that he owned in a place called the Ur of the Chaldees, and later on in a place called Haran, and just different places. He had vast amounts of land. He had vast amounts of servants and cattle and all that. He was a very, very wealthy man, very influential man. He was really the voice in that day of what we might call monotheism. It was really more of he was pointing to Yahweh, the one true God, and all the people around there knew that. And so he had vast amounts of influence as well, which makes what God is doing here very, very strange, because God is saying, Abram, I know you have an incredible life here. Abram had about as good a life as you could possibly have in those days. And God says, I want you to leave all of that. I want you to leave all of that. And I want you to go to a place that I will show you. He didn't even tell him where he was going to go. He just said, I just want you to pick up and I want you to leave. Now, we think in terms of, well, okay, what's the big deal? I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like it is today where he had a house. No. He owned vast amounts of land, everything. He had to not only move. Look, how many of you, Bill, you all went on vacation, didn't you? And you got 18 kids, right? Yeah, something like that-ish. Yeah, it's in that. I mean, some of them are so horrible that they're like having 12 kids. I get it. No. Can you imagine taking a family of eight on a trip? Can you imagine taking a, you know, your family? Look, Josh, you get it, right? Can you imagine taking all your children on a trip? He had to move all of these people and all of this. This was asking a lot, but God's asking him to leave everything. Here's the point. What God is telling him to do makes no earthly sense. It's not logical. If he were thinking logically, rationally, about the legit what God was asking him to do, it would be crazy for him to obey, and yet he did it. He just picked up and he left. That is the kind of relationship, the kind of obedience that he showed unto God. Now, the irrational obedience to God didn't stop there. Skip ahead to verse number 7 and notice. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. He said, and to your descendants. And there he builded an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. Now, what is so crazy about this? Well, notice he said, in essence, Abram, you're going to have children. Your children are going to become this amazing group of people. Now, to help us to understand what is so crazy about this, first of all, I said Abram was already 75 years old. He is already a very elderly man in terms of childbearing. However, what's more remarkable is his wife, Sarah. Sarah was also an elderly lady. She was already well into her older years. But not just that, Sarah had never been able to have children, even when she was young. I'm sure that Abraham and Sarah, remember back in those days, the most important thing to every couple was to have children, especially sons. That was how they, and it's even more remarkable that Abram became so powerful and so wealthy without having any children. But you know that when their younger days, in their 30s and 40s and all that, Abraham and Sarah probably tried numerous times and prayed and begged God to give them children. But Sarah was never able to have children, even when she was young. And now God is saying to Abram, you're going to have children now that you're both very, very old. Which makes his obedience here even that much more remarkable. Because look what he does. He built an altar. And this was symbolic of saying, God, I trust you. That's what he was saying. God, I trust you. I trust you. I believe you. Now, so Abram is his faith. Abram's faith in God is based on something more than what he can see and what he can touch in this particular world. Are you getting that so far? There's something different going on with Abram. And in as we continue on, so Sarah could not have children, at least not naturally. Not naturally. Now, supernaturally, we're going to find out she does later on. Let's continue on. Then verse number 9, it goes on. The story doesn't finish there. His remarkable faith continues to be displayed here. And Abram journeyed and going on still toward the south. And there was a famine in the land. There was a famine in the land. So again, watch. So Abram is over here in his homeland. He has all this land and it's fertile land. He is building vast amounts of wealth. His cattle are doing great. His crops are doing great. He is building all of this. Everything is good for him. And God says, I want you to leave all that. And God sends him away. And as he's traveling, he comes to the place where God is leading him and there's a famine. Now, let's be honest. Most of us, if God asked you to leave, what if God asked you to leave your current occupation? Go to, I was trying to think of the worst place to go, which is somewhere in California probably, Portland, somewhere like that. If God asked you, if you felt like God asked you to leave your job and travel all the way across the country and you picked up everything and you left and you got out to wherever that was and there was no job there for you, what would you do? What would you do? Wouldn't you go back home?
Yes, sir.
Abram he packed everything up. He took all of his servants and they went to this place and he gets there and there's no food and he can't feed his animals. He can't feed his servants. He can't take care of his wife. Let's be honest. Most of us, based on the circumstances of this physical world that he's living in, he'd just simply go back home. He just go back to that place where he was so successful, where he had everything, where life was so good. It would have been so easy for him just to simply say, well, you know what? I must have misunderstood God. Or, God, you didn't come through for me. This is not what I signed up for. And just gone on back home. But Abram never even hesitated. He continued on this journey that God began with him. But let's be honest. Most of us would be tempted to simply go back. You know, we leave something and things are good and maybe we're excited about God and all of that. And then something bad happens and where do we end up? Well, let's just continue with the story. So what happened? So he went on down to Egypt. What happened there? Because he sort of from this physical world, this natural world, he irrationally obeyed God against all things that were tempting for him to not obey God in this world. Something outside of this world pulled him further and he continued on. So he goes down to Egypt. What happened there? He became even more wealthy. He became even more prosperous. Every time he did the opposite of what this world seemed to be so tempting him to do, God ended up blessing him even more. And he ended up leaving Egypt years later with so much more than he had. Now, there's a whole lot more to his story we could talk about. He took his nephew Lot and he divided the land. He said, Lot, you pick the best. And Lot took the best. He took the well-watered plains of Jordan and all of that. And Abraham took what looked like a wilderness and somehow God ended up blessing him there as well. And there were five kings, tribes basically, that attacked. And Abram was such a powerful warrior. His men were such powerful warriors. He went in and he routed them, took everything they had. The story goes on and on and on. Abram just simply obeys God, even though his physical circumstances would say otherwise. And God continued to bless him. He continued to grow more powerful and so forth. So we then come, though, to the inevitable. we come to that inevitable point where even the greatest men or women are still just human beings, right? No matter how good a man you are, you're still just a man, guys. No matter how great a lady you are, we're still just human beings, right? And so he came to a point where the pull of this natural world was so strong, and he was tempted, and we're going to see that he was tempted in a way, this desire to have a child, this desire to have a son in particular, became so strong in him, and not just him, but in Sarah also, that we come to the point in chapter number 15, this natural man kind of shows up in him. Chapter number 15, notice verse number 2. And Abram said, Lord God, and I have a feeling that he probably was thinking, you know, many years ago you promised me a son. I remember when you told me, you promised me that I was going to have a child. So now, these years later, he said, Lord God, what will you give me seeing I go childless? And the steward of my house, his number one servant, is Eliezer of Damascus. So he had this servant, this trusted servant. And he says in verse number 3, Abram said, behold, you have given me no seed. You've given me no child. You've given me no son. But this one born in mine house is mine heir. So basically what he was saying was, would you please accept Eliezer? Because obviously, God, you're not going to give me a son like you said you would. So you must mean, look at what's Abram doing? The human part of him, the rational part of him is saying, well, God must have meant, what he must have meant was he was going to give me, he was going to bless my family through Eliezer and his children. He said, and lo, one born in my house is mine heir. He said, bless him, God, instead. And God says, nope. The word of the Lord came unto him saying, this is not your heir. And then God doubles down on this crazy, irrational promise to now a 90-year-old Abraham. He says, this is not your heir. In fact, your heir will be somebody who comes forth out of your own bowels. That's Old Testament King James for your biological child. He said, you're going to have a son. You're going to father a son. And the crazy part is, Abraham believed him. He believed him. And look at his response, verse 6. And he believed in the Lord. He believed him. So now Abram is 90 years old. And he, can I ask you a question? How could, he went through a little season of doubt, right? Do we not all go through little seasons of doubt? I mean, this remarkable man, he has believed God all this time. He's traveling. He has withstood every temptation of the world to kind of lead him away from God a little bit. He has this one little dip in his faith, and God reassures him by saying, hey, I am going to give you a son. And Abraham believed. How could he rise up out of that so quickly? How could he overlook the obvious physical part of this world that is everything against him having a child? How could he possibly rise up out of that? I'll tell you why. Because his faith was never rooted in the rational to begin with. His faith was never rooted in this physical world to begin with. His faith was rooted in something higher. Something not natural. Something supernatural. Do you follow me? So Abram, because Abram's faith wasn't rooted in the natural, then these natural arguments couldn't dissuade him from believing God. That's the point so far. I hope you're with me on that. So he just simply believed God, and he counted it to him for righteousness. That means God watched him. God saw that his faith was that he believed, and he counted it that much more as a righteous man. So we have this concept here that Abram, we're seeing a different kind of faith than Abram has, right? See, look, there are multiple kinds of faith, folks. We can believe in God and trust God because he has provided for us. Or we can trust God and have faith in God because God said that he would even before he has provided for us. There's a difference there. That's why I said this message is about us having a supernatural faith, a faith that is not based on something in this world that maybe what have you done for me lately, God? Right? But let's be honest. That's where a lot of Christians are. It's not a terrible thing. It's not a there is nothing wrong with saying, God, I need to hear from you. God, I need you to help me. There were people in the Bible like Gideon who put out a fleece. Remember Gideon? He put that fleece out and said, God, if you're really going to help me, then I need you to make this dry fleece wet. And then he did it again. Was Gideon a great man? Sure he was. Was he somebody that God called? Sure he was. But he wanted God to prove himself first. But Abram didn't need God to prove himself, because his faith had never been rooted in what God had done for him, but rather he had simply chosen to believe God. So now that the world is trying to convince him otherwise, now that circumstances are trying to convince him otherwise, his faith can't be shaken. So he was able to withstand this temptation. But as with our lives, Abram continued on his journey. And by the way, we're all on a faith journey, aren't we? Any of you arrived? Good. You really don't want to say you've arrived, because there's no reason for God to leave you here then. Right? You're no good to anybody. We're not, you know, and nobody's arrived. Nobody has gotten there in their faith to where they can't grow anymore. And so Abram is still growing, but just like in our lives, seasons of doubt come, seasons of fear come, seasons of anger, seasons of bitterness, seasons of, you know, God, when I needed you the most, like when your mother passed, when your father passed, when your child passed, when this tragedy came into your, when this financial reversal came into your life, when this health issue came into your life, when that person that you loved so much and was so important to you, and cancer took them from you, or suicide, or fentanyl, or something like that. See, these are the seasons that we find ourselves in. And what we're going to find out in those seasons is, what is our faith really based in? And if it's rooted in this, in our circumstances, in our physical world, then guess what? Then our physical world can shake our faith. But if it's rooted in something higher, then the physical world can't. But Abram was just like we are. He was a remarkable man, yes. His faith was incredible, yes, but he was still just a man. And so we come to chapter 16, and I would imagine that he and Sarah probably had some moments of depression, anxiety, kind of worried about, you know, God made this promise to us, and man, we just keep getting older, and the chances are less and less likely. They probably felt like their chances of having a child are about like your chances of winning that, what is that lottery now, $1.9 billion? You know, it's a funny thing about human nature, when there are more people buying tickets now than people are buying tickets now that would never have bought before. Like 5 million wasn't enough for you? Like, well, it's only 100 million. I can't live on that. You know, the odds of that are so incredible, and that's how they felt about their odds of having a children. And in fact, that was their odds. Statistically, Abraham and Sarah had a 0% chance of naturally having a child. And so Abram comes to that realization. And finally, his flesh, the carnal part of him, the human part of him, wins out over his spirit. And we come to chapter 16 and verse number 1. And it's gotten to Sarah. And Sarah, Abram's wife, she bare him no children, but she had a handmaid, an Egyptian. And please understand, and in our world, this is very, very hard for us to understand. But in those days, you know, her handmaid was basically her property, kind of like a slave, not really, but for all intents and purposes. And it seems like a very unfair story, and it is, and it's kind of a horrible thing, the position that women might have been in there. But this is the way it was. So get past that, and let's see the truth here. She had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And Sarah said to Abraham, behold, she said, you know, God promised you a child, and he hasn't delivered. God promised that he would meet your needs, and he hasn't delivered. Maybe he wants to do it through a natural way. I have this handmaid. She's young. Why don't you take her and have a child with her? And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarah. And as if you know the story, he went to Hagar, took her also like a wife, and he ended up having a child with her. And his name was Ishmael. Now, here's the thing. So Ishmael was born. But Ishmael was born the natural way. I mean, it wasn't spectacular. It was simply because Hagar was well within childbearing years. And it was basically just it was Abram taking the natural course. His faith, he still believed. Now, is God still involved in something like that? Sure. But not in a supernatural way. God has simply set up natural laws, yes? God has set up natural ways that this happens, and that is what happened. And so Ishmael was born, but he was just simply born naturally. He was born according to the natural laws. But as we're going to find out, and let me just say this as well, Ishmael was, he was a remarkable man as well. He ended up becoming a very powerful, powerful man, and he founded a lot of nations, as a matter of fact. He was a warrior. He was a leader. But here's the thing. Nearly all of his descendants ended up leaving faith in God. Why? Because he came into being a natural way. Compare that to Isaac. As you all know, God said, "This is not the heir I promised you." God said, "This is not the one that I promised you would be your heir. This is not the one that I wanted to start my people through." As you all know, a few years later, Sarah ended up supernaturally becoming pregnant. Yes? So we have two situations here. Abram is the father of two sons now. He has two sons. Ishmael was born out of Abram's natural faith. Let me just call it his natural faith. In other words, Abram said, "Look, I still believe God can give me a child, but I'm going to have to do something in order for it to happen. I'm going to need to go about it the natural way." And that's what he did by taking Hagar. Little did he know that God had another plan, a supernatural plan, where he was going to take, Isaac was born not the natural way, but and not according to the natural laws, but outside of those natural laws. Is everybody with me? So we have this picture that Abram is giving us here. He has two sons, one born out of his faith that he needed to be, that had to be based and rooted in this particular world, in this natural world, this rational world. This made sense, right? Did it not make sense? Oh, look, we're hard on Abraham, I think, at this point. I think many of us say, "Oh, I can't believe Abraham did this to Hagar." But it made sense, didn't it? His wife, Sarah, said, "This is, if you're going to have a son, this is the only way it's going to happen." And by the way, that was the only way it could happen naturally. And so it made sense. How often do we look at decisions and we say, "Well, you know, I don't know what God's going to do here. I think God will take care of me, but I'm going to have to find some logical way for God to take care of me. I'm going to have to find some, God's going to need my help." Isn't that amazing that we are that arrogant? That we think God needs our help to do the things that he has already said he will do? But that's natural. And if our faith is based in the natural, those are the things that we're going to follow. Those are the things we're going to do. And that's exactly what Abraham did. But he had another son, a son that was born supernaturally, outside, in spite of the natural laws. And his name was Isaac. And of course, you know, if you know the story, we know that that is the promise. Isaac had two sons, Jacob and Esau. Jacob had 12 sons, and they became the nation of Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel. So the descendants of Isaac, they went on to become, what happened to them not too long after that? They went on to become the nation of Israel. The descendants of Ishmael, they went on to become many, many nations, most of whom became enemies of Israel. Why did they leave the faith? Why did they leave Yahweh? Why would they leave the God of heaven? Why would their faith go somewhere else? Why would they begin to serve these other gods? Or I'll tell you why. Because they found great success in this world. They became very, very powerful people. Very wealthy people. Ishmael was a powerful, powerful leader on his own, but he was not looking to God for it. He was looking to this world, and they made a great name for themselves in this world. However, the people of God, the nation of Israel, what happened to them? They ended up going into Egypt as slaves. Do you see the contrast? Ishmael's descendants became great successes in this world, in this physical world, in this thing. It made perfect sense to them when the world promised them certain things, when life promised them certain things on this earth, they pursued those gods. But when Israel went into Egypt, God seemed to turn his back on them, didn't he? It would have seemed to most of them for 400 years they were slaves in Egypt. Does everybody remember the story? You remember Charlton Heston, right? That movie? Remarkable movie for its time. 400 years. So here's my question. Why would Israel have continued to follow God for 400 years as slaves in Egypt? Why would their faith remain? I'll tell you why. Because their faith wasn't rooted in their natural circumstances. It wasn't rooted in their lives in this physical world. Their faith came from something higher. Why did their faith come from something higher? Because Israel came from Abraham's supernatural faith. Are you with me on that? You see the difference. So, you know, how often do we see this? You know, the point of this is, you know, you and I can choose what to base our faith on. You and I can choose, base my faith on what is God doing for me here? What is my circumstance here? Have we not seen this over and over again? You see that somebody comes into church, and boy, we fall in love with them, we embrace them, and maybe they're leaving a bad past, maybe they're leaving some problems, and something happened, and they come here, they find Jesus, and they find this new hope, and get a job, and all of it, and things are going great, and their faith is growing. And by the way, that is oftentimes how faith begins. Yes? But how often do we so sadly watch, then suddenly, the circumstances in this world are not so great? I'll never forget a young man that left Delaware County Jail. His life was just in shambles. He came straight here, came straight to this church, and because the other inmates had told him, if you want help, go to New Hope. And I love that. I love that. We love that. And we embraced him, and we loved him, and we helped him. He got a job, and he was so excited. And about 7 days into his job, the credit report came back to his employer about his situation. He was doing so great. I mean, he was loving everything, and he was coming on Friday nights, and he was coming to church and doing all these things. And then he lost that job. And his employer said, oh man, look, we love you. We think you're doing a great job, but we can't keep you on here. And that was kind of the beginning of a spiral. And he ended up going back to his old friends, his old life, and it was just a week, and he got a hold of, you know, he got high one last time. Overdosed, and he was gone. Now, how often do we see that kind of thing? How often do we see, even in our lives, we believe God, we trust God, because God has done so much for me. I mean, we all say that, right? Oh, God has done so much. Why do you believe in God? Well, because he's done so much for me. That's great. But wait. We need to learn to believe God because of what God says, not because of what he does for us. Because what happens when he doesn't do something for you? What happens when you don't get the job, when you don't get the healing, when your parents do have this health problem come into their lives? What happens when this does happen to your child, or this does happen to you? When the events of this physical world, this natural world, don't go the way we think they should, our faith must be rooted in something higher. Because if our faith is rooted in the circumstances of this world, then the circumstances of this world can shake our faith. And if we don't learn anything else from Abraham, we need to look at all those times when he shook that off. And I mean, his faith was able to rise above all that irrationality, all that stuff. He never even thought about it. He never even considered not leaving Ur of the Chaldees. He never even considered, not going. He never even considered going back home when there was a famine. He never even considered, when God said, no, I am going to give you a son, he said, okay, good enough. He built an altar. Yes, he slipped one time. But even in his slip up, he taught us a valuable lesson. as we look down the road at these two, the product of his natural faith, the product of his supernatural faith. When he has rooted his faith in God based on what God said, not on what God does, this produces a life of faith that cannot be shaken. Can I beg all of you children, all of our young people in the room, I beg of you, we have failed you if we have told you you can believe in God because of all the things that God will do for you and all the things that he has done for you. Say, well, my children ought to believe in God because after all, they have a house over their head. No, you provide that house over their head. Yes, God provides it to you, but you provide it to them. What happens when they don't have that? What happens when mom and dad are not around? What happens when that child goes off to college? What happens when God is not meeting those needs? Hey, what happens when something terrible happens to you, to them, once they become an adult and suddenly their faith is shaken? And I'll tell you why it's shaken. Because they always thought that God was only as good as whatever he did for them. And my faith is only as strong while God is meeting my needs. Wait, what happens when we're so far away from those blessings of God? And now we sit and say, well, you know what? I prayed. How many times have you heard this? Maybe it's us. Maybe it's you. I prayed. I begged God not to take my, you name the person. I begged God not to so that I wouldn't get divorced, so that my husband wouldn't leave me, my wife wouldn't leave, my girlfriend like this. I begged God for all those things, and God let me down. We hear it all the time. Wait, God didn't let us down. God never promised that he was real based on what he does. God says, you believe me. Abraham believed God, took him at his word, and that was counted to him for righteousness. And then God blessed him even more. And that's the difference between a natural faith and a supernatural faith. See, I think we see the difference in Christians. We're talking about a martyr's faith, right? See, martyrs had that kind of faith. Corrie ten Boom had that kind of faith. You know who Corrie ten Boom was? If you don't know that story, you should look it up. Worth reading. It was that kind of faith. It was the kind of faith that some of us, we look at certain people. Well, let's be honest. You have somebody that you could look at in your life and you think, how does she still have that strong of faith? God's taken her husband. No, he didn't. Life took her husband. Sin took her husband. That's cause of sin. Her husband's gone. She's struggling. He's this, he's that. Her head's health. He can't walk anymore. Can't do. We look at people like that and we say, how do they have such strong faith? I'll tell you how they have that kind of strong faith. Because earlier in their lives, they made a decision that what God said was good enough. And he didn't have to prove himself over and over and over with stuff. With earthly things, physical things. Natural things. So are you looking for God to prove himself to you? Does God have to prove himself to you? Listen, God will do that. And I'm done, I promise. God will prove himself if that's what we need. But that's not the best kind of faith to have. The best faith is a decision. Hebrews 11:1 says, now by faith, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Not seen. If you have to have something to see, God will eventually prove himself to you. But that's not the really strong faith we're talking about this morning. We're talking about making a decision. If God said it, I'm going to trust him, no matter what the circumstances look like here. And that made all the difference in Abraham's life. And it can make the difference in ours.